Before you leave these portals to meet less fortunate mortals, there's just one final message I would give to you. You all have learned reliance on the sacred teachings of science, so I hope through life you never will decline, in spite of Philistine defiance, to do what all good scientists do. Experiment. Make it your motto day and night.
Experiment. Welcome to Shoestring Radio Theater. We now present part three of Amazing Struggles, written by Hugh Spencer, directed by Jeff Winsick, and produced by Monica Sullivan at Western Public Radio in San Francisco. Join us again as our band of intrepid science fiction writers wins their perilous way towards a brighter, a new sensibility. Success is in their reach.
Be curious, though interfering friends may frown.
Hello, Mr. MacReady?
Who?
I'm Sheldon Isaacs. Sorry, I guess your secretary hasn't arrived yet.
What are you doing here?
I just received your letter about my last submission, Outraged Virtue on...
On Ganymede! Oh, yes, you must be Isaac Sheldon.
Sheldon Isaac, sir.
Young man, you cannot just charge into Mr. MacReady's office.
Could you excuse us? I believe I have an unscheduled editorial conference coming up.
Very well, Mr. MacReady.
Sheldon, my boy, have a seat.
Thank you, sir.
Now, where did I put that thing? Aha, here it is, your manuscript. Interesting work. Very interesting work indeed.
Thank you, sir.
Sheldon, the reason I asked you here is because I truly feel a strong sense of obligation to the future of science fiction. I feel it's important to speak with young writers, guide them, channel them in the right direction.
That's very noble of you, sir.
Now, in your case, I do see some real problems with this story.
Oh, no!
No, but there's still some real potential here. I seem to remember that this character of yours, Horatio Steele...
Alexander Steele.
Quite right. This isn't the first story you've sent me with him in it, is it?
So far, I've written 22 Alexander Steele stories, and I always send them to you first.
Sheldon, I can't tell you how much I appreciate that.
I thought you might feel that way.
Have any of these stories been published yet? I don't want my fellow editors to think I'm poaching on their talent.
Well, nobody's paid me anything for them. My club newsletter has printed a few.
Really?
But only the really bad ones.
Oh, what kind of club is this?
The Fabulists. But I'm just a part-time member. I'm not a rat or anything.
I understand, Sheldon. True art is always above politics.
That's what I'm always telling them.
Anyway, back to the manuscript. There are one or two spots where I need a little clarification.
Really, Mr. MacReady? But I wrote it all down.
Do you mind if I make a few notes while we talk? Now, over here, on page 9, you have the chief of the Interplanetary Police Force chuckle happily as he orders the squadron of his rocket ship crewmen to an almost certain death.
That's right.
But in the rest of the story, the chief is supposed to be a sympathetic character.
Oh, yes. Chief Corgalgon is a lovable curmudgeon. No matter what, he's always laughing and cheerful.
You know, let's not worry about that right now. It may be that characterization isn't one of your strong points.
But I thought he was a good character.
Cut. Here's a bold thought, Sheldon. Why not get rid of Chief Corgalgon altogether?
Well, I don't know, sir.
Now, that way, the story would be much more scientific. Cut.
Oh, okay.
Cut. Oh, now, later in the story, you have the police force using two rocket ships to send Steele and Officer Gretchen O'Malley to Ganymede. There's a tiny logical problem here. Even if we assume that anti-gravity fields and repulsor rays are commonplace by the year 1987, sending two spaceships to the same moon must be a pretty expensive proposition. Why don't they use the same ship?
All the way through the solar system? Alone? Together? I'm sorry, Mr. MacReady, but my career as a serious author would be over quick as a wink if my mother ever caught me writing smut.
Okay, let's leave that one. Here is your manuscript back with my editorial comments.
Gosh, Mr. MacReady, that's a lot of comments.
Well, what I want you to do is to work on these comments, and after that, I think we might have a printable story here.
Really? Yes, sir! I'll send back the changes. Tomorrow!
Two rocket ships, please.
Mr. MacReady!
What?
I have a terrible problem. I just remembered. I can't let you have my story.
How's that?
Somebody else wants to publish it. I forgot I'd sent you a copy. I guess I sort of assumed that you'd reject it.
Who would want to publish it?
It's a new one. It doesn't have a name yet. My friends in the club are going to publish it.
Gosh, Sheldon, that's a real shame. I really wanted to work on that story with you. Is there somebody at your club I could talk to?
Maybe Dave. He's friends with the publisher.
Dave who?
Dave Poole.
Well, let's see what abuse will emerge from Fortress Tremendous.
Mr. Poole, I dearly hope you weren't too disappointed about the last rejection letter.
Oh, yeah, it was great.
I trust you will be somewhat happier with the following proposal. Science fiction is a creative form with an obligation to its own future. To be brief, I need an assistant, and I hear that you've got the potential for the job. So, what do you think?
Wow, Karl Marx on a rubber crutch. This looks for real, but if this letter is from MacReady, where's the other 49 pages?
Dave?
So there they are. My friend David Poole and the idealistic Ray Ann Sparks alone together in her apartment. Oh, what could they be up to? Oh, probably something political and professional.
Are you dressed yet?
Hell's bells.
No, I'm sleeping in. Why don't you come back here to bed and scratch my back?
This just isn't fair. Not only has Dave got a relationship with the only willing woman I knew back then, now he's going to become a pro. Why did MacReady go to Dave? Why not to somebody better qualified? Or why not to me?
What are you reading?
Oh, it's just a letter. You were in the bath so long, I was getting bored.
Poole, you are such a pig.
Who is it from?
Another pig.
Oh, it's just another letter from MacReady saying the usual, reactionary things. Oh.
You sneaky sack of scum.
I thought you said you needed both hands to lift one of his letters.
Maybe he's getting some editorial assistance.
You liar.
I don't want to sound too bourgeois, but I really don't do this sort of thing.
What sort of thing?
Invite young men into my bed for the night.
Really? I thought sharing was what communism was all about.
Oh, very witty.
Fool, you son of a...
Oh. I'm really excited about the convention. I had to work really hard to convince the League office to take you guys seriously. But it's all going to happen. After Mitchell's speech, things are really going to change.
That's what science fiction is all about. Change.
Oh, yeah. Things were going to change, all right. So there we were at the first World Science Fiction Convention. I was never sure why they called it the World Science Fiction Convention. Back in 1937, it was very unlikely that anyone further than 50 miles out of town would have made it there. A pretty small world, if you ask me. Now, let's not even talk about the universe. Eventually, I learned that the primary function of these events was to validate the personal fantasies of some pretty alienated people. If you happen to be a strange individual living in your own little science fiction universe, then it's reassuring to discover some other individual doing the same sort of thing. Of course, there can be some complications.
That's the dumbest thing I ever heard!
Don't be such a crybaby.
Your costume is all wrong. Robert, you know, what color are Alexander Steele's boots?
Let me think about that for a moment, Sheldon.
Well, I know. His boots are black. Black as shimmering cylinders of oil-slick obsidian floating in the nebula-filled sky. I know that because I wrote it.
I kind of figured you did, Sheldon.
So, his boots are not brown.
No way am I painting my dad's boots black.
I am Alexander Steele. You are supposed to be his evil energy duplicate. How can an evil energy duplicate have brown boots?
Take it easy, Sheldon.
Yeah, you really have to get more mature, or you're in danger of evolving into a permanent dork.
Oh, rats! You've invalidated the whole concept!
Hey, Sheldon, couldn't a frequency flux in the duplicator field create a mild color distortion?
Shut the heck up!
Thus endeth one of science fiction's more profound philosophical discussions. These conventions had another important function, though. They were places where aspiring writers might happen to meet some professionals and make some contacts. And at this convention, MacReady, Cross, and Evanston had agreed to attend, as well as my fabulist friend. Normally, I'd be networking my brains out, but today I was eagerly awaiting the dawn of a new age in progressive science fiction. Even though I had a pretty bad cold.
Bob, where the heck have you been?
Sick. I'm in New Jersey.
Oh.
I had to go visit my aunt, and I got this damn cold.
So you haven't heard anything about the convention? No one's talked to you?
Sorry, I was sick.
Oh, man.
I mean, I really ought to be in bed, but I'm not going to miss Mitch's speech. Oh, it's going to be a joy to watch MacReady squirm.
Robert, we have to talk.
How tired we are of this brutal world, this criminally stupid system that forces us to surrender our better nature, our curiosity, our compassion, just to eke out a few pennies in a violent, cruel, and soul-deadening struggle for survival.
America is the wave of the future. Its heady combination of free enterprise and individualism will make us leaders in science and technology well into the next century. And science fiction is America's literature. It is the genre that drives our upward spiral of progress that is our nation, a pathway that will take us to the very stars.
I offer you a new vision of science fiction, a combination of social speculation and Marxism. My comrades in this creative struggle have honored me by naming this new literature for the workers of the future as Mitchellism. Mitchellism is the philosophy that states that followers of science fiction should actively agitate and strive for the realization of a scientific state of world socialism and universal social justice. This goal must be the driving force behind all our actions as artists and citizens of this promised future state. And Mitchellism asserts that science fiction is a force that acts through the medium of imaginative stories on the hearts and minds of the youth of the world. Progressive science fiction unerringly advocates the necessity for equality and socialism in a unified world nation.
These intellectuals would like to keep us under their heel. How many of you know that our own Navy has designed a flying submarine? Or how Ford and GM are keeping their plans for cheap water-powered engines a secret? What about those cheap, inflatable houses we could each buy for just $5? You don't know, because the unions and the governments want to hang on to the status quo. Someday, we little guys are going to take those big guys on!
And to reach these vital objectives, the informed predictions of science fiction should focus us on the triumphant values of the Communist International. Oh, the hell with it!
Are you okay? You look like you have a headache.
Yes. No. No, I'm fine.
Pretty wacky stuff, huh?
Oh, for God's sake! What kind of a bunch of morons are you people?
What? Mr. MacReady.
Yes, young man?
Hi, I'm Dave Poole. We spoke on the phone the day before yesterday.
Poole? Oh, yes, Mr. Poole.
I'm still very interested in your offer, and I thought you might like to meet some of my associates. This is Sarah Zuckerman, and this is Robert Clyde.
More budding writers? Wonderful.
Hey, what? Oh, sorry, Rayanne.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Is something wrong?
Wrong? I just witnessed the greatest setback in the history of socialism. What member of the Klan schedules the programming at this goddamn worthless convention? And where the hell were you? I thought you were supposed to be her friend.
You mean I missed Geraldine's speech? Damn, Rayanne, I've been sick. I mean, I dragged myself out of bed for it, but I guess I messed up on the time.
Oh. Sorry, Bob. I didn't know you were sick.
As with many things in life, there's a degree of ambiguity here. I did show up to see my friend speak and support the cause, even though it was pretty much a lost one. But now, with Poole as assistant editor at Tremendous Stories, we had our collective foot in the door. And if I applied a bit of guile myself, I would get to make friends with Rayanne.
Hey, why don't we go get some coffee somewhere and talk about it?
So the convention was about as successful for me as it could get. There was only one casualty that day in 1937. Geraldine Mitchell was the only one of us who did not become one of Stuart D. MacReady's new stable of writers. In fact, Mitchell and Mitchellism disappeared from science fiction forever.
Present Orson Welles and the Mercury Theater on the air in The War of the Worlds by H.G. Wells.
That was no Martian. It's Halloween.
Yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live.
Now let's move ahead to the year 1943 with some suitable footnotes to this part of our story. By that time, I was hauling a bazooka somewhere on my way to Berlin. I really did get to fight fascism, but not in exactly the way I thought. Camp Fantastic and the Fabulous are a pre-war memory now. But Poole's kept his word to all of us. We all had been drafted into the pages of Tremendous Stories.
Mr. MacReady.
What is it, Poole?
My goodness, you're really suffering, aren't you?
My allergies acting up again.
You know, it might get better if you didn't smoke so much.
Was there something related to your job that you wanted to talk to me about, Poole?
Oh, yes, I need to talk to you about Sheldon's latest story.
Oh, yes.
Well, he's written in a conveyor belt system that spans the Atlantic Ocean, and he's got the Engineer Society calling them super rubbers. I think we need to use a less suggestive term here.
Yes, I can see that. Let's call them flexible titanosyntha transports.
Well, that sounds good, Mr. MacReady.
Oh, dear, Mr. MacReady.
You S.D. MacReady, editor of tremendous stories of super science.
Yes. What's the meaning of all this?
We're federal agents. This is our warrant. We have orders to seize all files and documents on the premises. You there! Drop those files!
Well, I hope you don't mind cleaning up. Why are you doing this?
National security. The war, remember?
But, sir... we're a patriotic, law-abiding magazine. Oh, you can't possibly be angry about some silly editorials we printed over 5 years ago. Many engineers, servicemen, and government scientists read our magazine on a regular basis.
In the January 1943 issue of Tremendous Stories, did you not print a story titled The Mightiest Monster Weapon, where a race of alien beings was destroyed by a weapon powered by a force called atomic fission?
Yes, we did. Is that a problem?
Could be, Adolf. Or is that Tojo? We cannot answer your question on the grounds that it may undermine military research integrity.
Oh, God.
Don't take it so hard, Fats. No need to cry.
It's not that. He's allergic to your carnation.
Right. Now, Mr. McGreedy, your files will be returned following the successful conclusion of this investigation, provided some tribunal doesn't find you guilty of treason.
Oh, God!
I am undergoing a subjective state of astonishment. Never before have I assimilated such intense concepts and sensations. What you have communicated has shattered my preconceptions while expanding my perceptual field.
The manuscript is incredible, isn't it? All of it based on techniques I learned from the transcendental contortionist of Istanbul.
Incredible. Yes, that may be an appropriate description of my emotional response.
Here, relax. Have another drink. We can really knock some heads around with this stuff. We're right on the cutting edge, you and I.
Patience, dear listeners. The meaning of that exchange will become clear later. Let's move ahead about 2 years, where we'll have bigger fish and bigger cities to fry. So when did it all change for us? When did the fabulists truly grow up? When did science fiction lose its virginity?
We're over the target. Bombardier, release the payload. Payload away!
It was at 9:03 a.m. local time. Thursday, August 24th, 1945, Hiroshima.
Times have changed, and we've often rewound the clock.
That concludes Amazing Struggles, written by Hugh Spencer, directed by Jeff Winsek, and produced by Monica Sullivan at Western Public Radio in San Francisco. It starred Louis Parnell, Francis Germishausen, Tamar Cohn, Frank Clemens, Cynthia Cravens, Russ Hickman, and Jeff Winsek. Our co-producer was Steve Rubenstein, and our senior associate producers were Adam Ling and Cynthia Cravens. We thank Carol Pearson and Carolyn Van Putten for their enduring commitment to public radio. You can write to us in care of our producer, Monica Sullivan, at srt@shoestring.org. For more information on Shoestring, visit our website at www.shoestring.org. For Shoestring Radio Theater, I'm Jeff Winsick. Thank you for joining us.
If old hymns you like, if bare limbs you like, if Mae West you like, or me undressed you like, why no?